not so much regarding a decision to go forward, but how to best undertake the effort and to deploy the resulting capital with the least amount of tax, legal, and social disruption. My feeling is that a more beneficial deposition would be of the New York Signal, as there is a smaller subscriber base without the long and emotional history as the Bay Area, that would be KPFA, far more associated value, a similar dysfunctional staff, though far less effective, and an overall better opportunity to redefine Pacifica going forward. It is simply the more strategic asset. He goes on to say the executive committee, at a minimum, that is the board's executive committee, at a minimum, should have access to experts, whether from Wall Street, from NPR, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, Microsoft, or otherwise, to get a strong reality check about radio and Pacifica's position in it so that informed decisions can be made. We have, and then he continues by saying, we have a self-imposed constraint on asset redeployment. Which I believe means sale of stations, that leaves us cash-starved at a time when our industry is being propelled in new directions, each requiring capital outlays of consequence. This board, that is the then National Board of Pacifica, this board needs to be educated quickly and to take action that will be far more controversial than the KPFA situation. That's one piece of evidence. The other is I've heard it from people on the board saying they thought we should explore the possible sale of either KPFA in Berkeley or WBAI here in New York. On this question of a corporate model, I heard that also directly from people on the board. I remember Wendell Johns at a board meeting said, let's face it, we live in a world dominated by corporations. We have to learn from those corporations. We have to take on that corporate model. I don't know how much clearer it could be that that was the intention of some of the old leadership of the national board.
Are you suggesting then that everyone on a board should think like you and take your model as a model of rightness? Do you allow any dissent or do you allow anyone to have a different idea to bring it up?
Yes, and
if you do, then what you're saying, anyone who brings up anything, they can hang any part of that to make their point there, you're going to do it.
No. I was just suggesting that there were people in the leadership who were attempting to push Pacifica into a direction, not just I, but that many of the people involved in our stations, including many listeners, did not want it to go. That is far cry from saying there's no room for dissenting ideas. I invite you to come to Houston to the next board meeting. You will hear plenty of dissenting ideas. I don't know if you've had an opportunity to be at or to listen to any of the board meetings during this year. There are many dissenting ideas. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the direction that the organization is going in as based by decisions made by its leadership.
Mm-hmm. Here's what Lou Hill said. Let me interject this.
Let me just, if I could, Gary, there are a few more. One big point I just want to speak to, if I can. And without going into every single detail of it, you raised the issue of the contract with Democracy Now! That is the independent production contract. And you said also that you have never attacked Amy. I must say on the August 26th show that you did, when you talked about her, quote, ambush style of journalism and her, I'm sorry, I don't have the exact language you used of it, when you described her interview with then President Bill Clinton on the air, you weren't screaming or yelling or name calling, but I don't know how anybody could hear that as anything less than an attack on Amy Goodman. But I think that this contract with Democracy Now! Is obviously a very complicated issue. It comes out of several years of really very continuous high-level assault against the whole team that produces Democracy Now! And particularly against Amy Goodman herself. She does not in that contract have the right to raise money for herself on the air.
I have the contract.
She has the right to raise money other places. She has the right to, and in fact has continued to raise money for Pacifica, for our five stations and for Pacifica, and continues to do that. There are, since the contract was signed and made public, a number of very important and some very legitimate criticisms that have been raised of the contract. Amy and the producers at Democracy Now! Have made it clear that they are more than willing to sit down with the board and renegotiate certain parts to look at and evaluate and discuss, and if necessary, renegotiate parts of that contract.
Why shouldn't we all get a contract?
Let me just finish, Gary. And on two particular issues, they have also made it very clear that they have backed off and will take this out of any new contract or new wording as an addendum to the contract or whatever. One is on the list of donors. That is off the table. They will no longer have access to the list of donors to any of our stations or to Pacifica in general. And the other is exactly the issue you raised. That is who would be named as an arbitrator should there be a conflict. Michael Ratner's name is off the table also. He, in fact, though, you should know, and your listeners should know, has, in fact, given legal advice at different times to Amy Goodman, just as he has given legal advice to the Pacifica Foundation. But in any event, he's a non-issue at this point.
Okay, but let's just review two things you just said so I'm clear on it. I'm just trying to get clarity.
Okay.
The contract that was signed by you and Dan Coughlin and Democracy Now!,
yes.
Did it have in there that he would be the arbitrator? Did it have in there that she could raise funds for her production?
Okay.
I know what I'm reading here in the contract.
Yes, I don't have the contract in front of me. I didn't know that was going to come up on this show. I would have brought it with me. Nonetheless, my recollection is that, yes, they were. But maybe I wasn't clear enough. The issue, as I said, since the contract has been shown around and people have seen it, some very important, valuable, insightful criticisms have been raised. Myself and as the lead person who negotiated this contract can recognize that. I've said that quite openly to people. What I believe needs to happen and what Democracy Now! Folks have indicated back to the national board is that they are willing to sit down with us and look at the particular questions or concerns or differences that people have.
But this
have.
Is after the fact that
That's
it was
right.
signed and after
That's
the fact
right.
that it does say under fundraising, it says specifically, quote, producer, that's Amy Goodman and Democracy Now!,
yes.
will actively assist Pacifica stations. Producer shall have the right to engage in fundraising on its own behalf.
Right. That's
to help
not
it meet its production expenses. Well,
right.
you said
that's
that didn't exist. I'm saying it does exist.
But that's,
here.
That's not on the air.
That's independent. That's outside of it. She can tomorrow night have a benefit at someone's house and raise money for her show, just as you could.
But it says that she can get the detailed list of Pacifica.
I just told you that was a mistake in that contract, okay. and they have agreed.
Have you been a friend of Amy Goodman's?
No, but hold on.
No, I'm not on trial. Excuse me. I'm not on trial, A. B. No, I don't even know what her birthday is. No, I am not a friend. I'm
okay.
friendly toward her.
Your question.
You also said that was taken
under
out of the
under the
contract,
rules of the foundation.
I think that ought to be said.
Right.
That it was taken out of the
contract. The contract has
there.
Not been renegotiated. The contract, what I...
The contract's not renegotiated?
No. I'm saying, can I just... It'd be easier to be clearer if I'm not being interrupted. Right? What I said, and I'll say it again, is that I believe that... Some of the criticisms, not all of them, but some of the criticisms of the contract are valid. They have been passed along to Amy and the others at Democracy Now! They are willing to sit down with representatives of the board and the whole board to look at those particular issues to see if where we can come to agreement to do an addendum or some attachment to the contract. That is different than throwing out the whole contract and starting from scratch. What I am prepared to do is to look at, revisit certain particular issues. In the course of that, or as this is still unfolding, Amy and the folks at Democracy Now! Have agreed to in any addendum that is done to the contract, to take out the access to the list, the donor list, and take out the name of any particular person, in this case Michael Ratner, as the named potential arbitrator should there be a need for one. So it's not there is a new document that's done, but those issues are clearly non-issues from this point forward.
Well, they're issues until she decides she's going to allow those things to be changed. Question is, could you give me the specific citation under the bylaws that gave you the right to negotiate and sign the contract prior to being reviewed by the board?
Sure. This is not in the bylaws. This is, as you know, Gary, there is not a particular citation. On the December 29, 2001 conference call of the new interim board, which was the first meeting of this board, where we took certain action, where the officers of the interim board were elected, we decided the date and place for the first full weekend meeting here in New York in mid-January, and several other actions were taken. One action was to agree to enter into a process to negotiate a contract for an independent production with Democracy Now!, and the second part of that agreement was to authorize me to give me the authority to negotiate that contract and sign that contract. Again, I don't have it with me. I could send you, if you want, the transcript of that meeting where it clearly says that. Now, whether or not the board was right or wise to do it that way, one can question that. What I'm saying, though, is that it did happen not as a function of the bylaws, but as a function of a decision.
What are you going to do to acknowledge the other 500-plus producers working as volunteers or paid or minimally paid and their costs, their expenses, their efforts to also be acknowledged?
Well, this is a critically important issue and obviously is handled somewhat differently from station to station. I think that the New Pacifica, as we are beginning to rebuild it, and it's not happening overnight by any means, needs to do that, needs to figure out how to do that. Clearly, individual producers have different relationships to their own stations or to the whole network. Not too many people do shows that are broadcast 5 days a week on all five stations, so that makes Democracy Now! Somewhat unique. It's also somewhat unique in the amount of money it raises because it is broadcasting on all five stations. And the other ancillary fundraising. I know that Amy has done fundraising in Texas for the Houston station, in California for KPFA, here in New York. So there's other contributions that Amy and the staff make to the stations. But I do think that the New Pacifica needs to figure out how to give more support. I think one way we give support, of course, is to do trainings without charging producers, to have them let them have access to studios where they can produce their shows, to give them equipment that actually works, that they don't have to buy their own equipment. There are many, many ways to make real and substantive signs of support for the literally, as you say, hundreds of producers that are not paid staff throughout the system.
Okay, I appreciate the answer. Thank you. If you go back to Lou Hill, and this is very important for our future, for everyone's future here, let me quote verbatim Lou Hill, and then I'd like your response, please. Quote, here's what Lou Hill said about the power of radio and what he saw as his vision. And by the way, he was not alone. This was the group of individuals he worked with at the time. Lou Hill did not see the ideal radio station as a means for public access or as a reflector of community preferences or opinions. That's crucial. That's absolutely opposite today. There was no local advisory boards. In fact, the local advisory boards were mandated by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting in 1979, and he was not interested in listener control of Pacifica stations. In fact, he initiated a report to the listeners only for a feedback for non-renewing subscribers to who could let him know why they were dissatisfied and any other criticisms from listeners. And he said that, I would imagine that if a sound is worth passing through the magnificent apparatus of a microphone, a transmitter, or a receiving set, it ought to convey something of meaningful intelligence. And Hill didn't like anything that smacked of propaganda, nor did he subscribe to Marx's concept of the class revolution and economic determinism, or any of the things which eliminated any kind of free will. He believed in a different model. So we have to ask ourselves, we seem to be going into a one-sided direction that many people feel could be very serious as a continuing crisis. I would look at what is happening now from my perspective, and again, it's my own subjective perspective, as that there is a crisis starting because of the power given to the local labs and the other groups who themselves become frequently self-appointing. They do not represent, from my research, the vast broad base of people listening to a station. In fact, most people don't even know about the labs who listen to radio, even non-commercial radio. And then you get people who have their own ideological, own political, own emotional idea of what should be on the radio. And then they start to demand that this is what we want to have. And we've seen examples of this. And that one good example is the station manager in Washington being suspended, Tony, because he wrote a letter challenging the head of the local labs. Statements and what he felt were inferences that were inappropriate, and he was suspended. When I spoke with Tony, he said it was not based upon the due process he felt he deserved, and it taught him a lesson, though. And that lesson was that the labs are going to control everything, and that is absolutely the opposite of what Lou Hill and the founders of Pacifica wanted. So my thought is, if you want to take this, you're going to win. Here's the interesting part of this, Leslie. The people in the audience may not know this, but I know this. You're going to win because we've seen the tactics that your supporters use. And you stick a team of fire ants on people, they're not going to be stung to death by it, and they're going to step out of the fray. And at some point, you're going to have everything you want with no opposition whatsoever. You may also at that point have no one listening to the radio except for those people who want a one-sided, very narrow, radically left perspective. And if that's what you all want, then just be honest, come out, state it, and that way everybody can know what it's about, because that's the way this thing is drifting, and especially with the way the labs are coming into this, and this is exactly opposite of what Lou Hill wanted, and Lou Hill's words are there. They're not made up. Okay. It's not subjective.
All right.
Your thoughts, please.
Okay, I'm familiar with the document you're reading from The Theory of Listener-Sponsored Radio by Lou Hill, and, one of the things that happens, and I just want to address about two points that you made. One of the things that happens is that, the radio station started in 1942. Since that time, there are restrictions that have been imposed by the FCC, which forced the radio stations to change. The impact of the economy causes the radio stations to change. It's just like the first automobile. You don't want to go back and want to be a purist and ride in a T-Model Ford. There are new automobiles that have changed with the times. When you talk about Tony in Washington, D.C., well, I'm intimately aware of what happened in Washington, D.C., and I have had several conversations with him about that, and he recognized that he had made an error, and he was glad that all he got was a suspension. The whole issue of the direction of the radio station, I don't think you listen to it. You make statements about what's on the air that just have no basis in fact. I mean, it's not the reality. One-sided direction, one could say that natural living is a one-sided direction. I mean, you bring people on who talk about different kinds of treatments. You don't bring people on to say that, no, you shouldn't do that. There are a lot of people who believe, rightly or wrongly, that, too much vitamin C is no good for you. And, so what we do is we present information in an atmosphere that is totally, that is going in a totally different direction. We, one little lone voice with a couple of minutes, 168 hours a week, trying to do its best to present information to let people know that a lot of what they're hearing everywhere else is not true. And, if we get accused because we are in pursuit of bringing that information to people, of being one-sided, then I think we should be willing to accept that charge, given the atmosphere that we're working in.
Has anyone gone back at this point to in any way investigate or to find the truth of what happened to the people whose lives were affected, careers were affected, who came from minority backgrounds, had been involved in community support, who had worked in the local labs, had had a history of working on social movements, and who suddenly were pillared and denigrated, whose livelihoods were threatened.
Are you talking about Sharan Louise Harper?
I'm not aware that that happened to Sharan. If she did, then someone should apologize to
lost,
her.
She lost her job.
Yeah, but did anyone go hack into her computer? Did anyone say, we've got a bullet in this gun for your daughter? Did Sharan have to go and live in a hotel room for 3 days out of fear, and the police confirmed that the threats could not be discarded as superficial?
Well, Gary, let me say that during the last...
And were you out there telling these people this is not right, we shouldn't be doing this?
Yes, in fact, that's exactly what I wanted to say. That I know during the period of, I guess, for about a year and a half, leading up to last December's settlement of the lawsuits, there was a very active movement around this country. It wasn't here only in New York. It was around the country in the five listening areas. And there were some people in that movement who I think did use tactics that were inappropriate, that are not the tactics that I support. And I did say so. And I said that I thought that those tactics were inappropriate and should not be used, as did some other people. So the answer to your question is yes, we did not condone those methods. We did not encourage those methods.
I didn't say that anyone ever called to say we're sorry that we tried to destroy your life.
Well, I not having done that.
How does it feel to have gotten power by taking it this way? That concerns me.
Well, that's not how I don't believe that's how in fact this transition happened.
Well, then tell me why all these people resigned. Unless under coercion and fear and threat.
Well, I'm not sure who you're talking about now in terms of...
Any one of the board members who were forced off the board, did any of them leave voluntarily, or were they just could no longer because of the lawsuits against them and because of the harassment against them, because of fear that their employers, as one said, she went for a job and the person said, I can't hire you until you get off the board because they're threatening to boycott my people, and I can't have that. And the person said, I can't stay on a board. I'm a volunteer.
Right.
Oh, by
the
way, isn't everyone on the board a volunteer?
Yes.
Have you asked to be paid?
No.
No.
I get reimbursed for travel expenses or, you know, long distance phone expenses.
So in other words, you're not going to make any request to be paid?
No.
Okay.
Well, I don't even know where that question comes from, Gary.
No, I'm just asking. It's just a question. I'm concerned.
Well, again, let me just be very, 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 very clear about this. Not just for you, but for anybody and everybody who happens to be listening. I am not requesting payment. I am able to do this work not because I have deep pockets or a big bank account, but because there are other individual activists, old, longtime friends of mine around the country who have made a commitment to me personally to help me pay my bills during this period. I have not requested, not asked for in any way, shape, or form money from the Pacifica Foundation except for reimbursement for legitimate expenses, travel, long distance, et cetera.
Fair enough. I appreciate it. Thank you for answering that. What can be done now to address the over 50 people who have been banned and fired
since
January?
I beg to differ.
Their names.
The list that I saw was 41 or 42, so maybe some other names have been added to it.
It has.
And again, there was... Okay, so I first of all would like to see the list. Secondly, the list that I saw before included names of people, for instance, from the Pacifica National News, PNN, who were not banned and fired. There was a negotiated settlement through their union where they got severance packages.
They were forced to take it, weren't they not?
Excuse me, I don't know what that means, forced to take it. There was a negotiated settlement.
No, but they weren't given an opportunity to stay in the job.
We had no money.
Oh, but now we're asked to pay for free. Is not true, weren't they union?
Yes, that's why
Free Speech Radio non-union or SCAB?
That is why we negotiated with the union.
Okay, but now we have a SCAB union.
No, we don't.
Free Speech Radio union?
I'm actually not sure. I don't believe they are unionized.
It's not union. Well, if they're not union, what are they?
They're an independent production. People who work together to produce a daily program.
And is that not in your...
This is not something that the Pacifica Foundation pays for.
Oh, but hold on. Isn't that in your new budget?
Not in the national budget, no.
I've seen a 3% figure going towards them.
Different stations, I believe, in the network have picked up Free Speech Radio News and have negotiated, you know, payments.
Have they not been told to take this radio?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Each station made its own decision.
In other words, we had a union group who had been there doing a good job. They're gone, told they have to leave, and they could take a buyout. And now we've got Free Speech Radio that is non-union, and now they're told, well, now it's going to cost a certain amount from the stations. I'm concerned about that.
Well, I can hear that you're concerned about it. I think your concern is misplaced. I think it's a perfectly legitimate process that has unfolded where a group of people got together, decided to produce a daily news broadcast, and then shopped it around. Went to the different radio stations, not only Pacifica stations. Other community-based stations around the country also carry Free Speech Radio News.
Okay. What do you see as the future of the board? And
well,
what about the other members of the board?
This is an interim board. By definition, by the settlement of the lawsuits, which I think was actually the two main things that led to the transition was and led to people leaving the national board. The two main things were the dynamics around the lawsuits, where as we got closer to, as the dynamic unfolded, where it became closer that there was going to be a settlement, a number of people left the board, and also the growing realization last fall that the foundation was in terrible financial shape. And I think a lot of people left the board because they didn't want to deal with a large debt.
But wasn't part of the reason the foundation was in debt is because the lawsuits brought against it and was not, if you go back and look at the financial statement of the board and the foundation just 3 years ago, it was not in debt?
That's right. I think that it is true that because of the lawsuits, the foundation made decisions, the leadership of the foundation made decisions about how to respond to the lawsuit, which included hiring the most high-priced law firms you could find, and many of them, at outrageous figures, instead of sitting down to negotiate with the people who had brought the lawsuits. When I first went on to the board in June of 2000, at that point there was one lawsuit. I think it was a lawsuit brought by members of the local advisory boards. One of the first questions I raised at that first meeting I went to was, could we consider sitting down and trying to negotiate a settlement to that lawsuit instead of going through a long, drawn-out, and expensive legal process. I was ruled out of order by then-chair Dr. Mary Frances Berry for even raising the question. So there are different ways to respond to lawsuits. The old leadership chose to find the most expensive way to respond by, again, hiring extremely expensive law firms and then changing midstream.
How much were they spending on lawyers?
I don't remember the total figure, but it's
$2 million.
Yeah, I think it was over $2.5 million. So it was a lot of money.
Where did the rest of the money go?
There was other wild expenditures by the former national executive staff, the former national executive director. You know, the most expensive airfares, the most expensive hotel rooms, things rung up on the foundation's credit card that we still can't figure out what they all were for. Just wild spending that had nothing to do with the lawsuits at all. That generated, well over $1 million of debt on that alone, on just airfares and hotel rooms. I travel a fair amount. At this point, as chair of the board and the executive director travels a fair amount, we both stay in people's homes when we travel to the different cities. We don't go stay in fancy hotels. I call cheap tickets, right? Or orbits. I go for the cheapest ticket I can find at whatever hour of the day it is. There are ways. Of course, a foundation has to spend money to keep functioning, but there are ways to spend money, that are more cost effective than others. The old leadership just went on a spending spree.
In addition to that, Leslie, there was the West Hill Partners, one of the most expensive public relations firms in the country, White Shoe, like the law firms, and this Decision Strategies, which in fact was an investigative private corporation that was charged with looking into the backgrounds and gaining corporate intelligence on people in the movement, people who have been in the movement for civil rights, human rights, the civil rights movement, and progressive causes across this country, that was a charge to them. And those indeed were about $1 million between those two.
Right.
In addition to the law expenses.
There was at least one trip to the Caribbean. There was a car that was a luxury car.
Was that a trip to the Caribbean? Would you please be specific? Was that Eutrice Leeds' trip to see her to her dead father in the Caribbean, and did she pay for that, or did the station pay for it?
Well, we have on our records a trip paid to the Caribbean. I'm not
going to say
who took it, but it was...
Sorry, are you charging malfeasance towards her?
Gary, you raised her name. I said that there was a trip to the Caribbean, and that is a fact. Came it back on the credit card. I guess we could take a look and see, you know, when... those two things, did they happen concurrently? But what I'm saying is that there was a trip to the Caribbean that was taken. By the way, you're listening to WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. My name is Bernard White. I'm here in the studio with Leslie Kagan, as well as we've been joined by Valerie Van Isler, who has something she would like to say. And Gary Nell is on the telephone. Normally you would be hearing The Positive Mind with Armand DeMille today, but Armand has graciously stepped aside to give us an opportunity to have this discussion. I do hope that you are getting something out of the discussion as we analyze some of the things that have been put out over the air. Valerie?
Yes, thank you very much, Bernard. The issue was raised here, and it has been raised on not only programs on WBAI, but on at least two other radio stations in the past a few weeks. A statement here about Gary Nell calling me. There was a call on my answering machine during a time when my brother, who was a senior policy analyst in Washington, the Department of Commerce, had suddenly passed away from a heart attack. We were in grief. I retrieved that call. I talked with colleagues about, in fact, that someone had left a message. This was like 2 days before the Gary Nell series was to be on the air last spring. I also spoke to my attorney. I had retained an attorney from December on to look at these issues, to follow the process, to hopefully protect whatever rights we had. And on the advice of my attorney, I called Gary Nell back, told him about the death in my family and the circumstances there, and also that on the advice of counsel, I would not be appearing on his program, encouraged him to call all the other people who had not been contacted for this series, including Dan Coughlin, Leslie Kagan, Juan Gonzalez, and others. The conversation was about a minute and a half. That is the only contact I had with Gary Nell all of last year.
Let me also, actually, Gary, earlier on you said that...
let me respond to this. Valerie, when I called after the so-called coup, did I ask you what I could do to help you?
Gary, I don't remember any call after the coup. I remember this call because of the circumstances around my brother's death.
But let me see if this refreshes your memory. I called you at the, and I asked you what had happened, and you said, they have fired me. I said, why? You said, they didn't tell me. I said, who fired you? You said, Bessie Walsh. I said, she has to have a reason. Did she give you a reason? No reason. What can I do to help you? Who can I call? Do you recall that conversation?
At this point, Gary, I don't really, because a lot has happened since that time. I retained counsel immediately, and I still have legal counsel to this day. And, of course, we'll retain that given some of the events that are happening, particularly at this time. I want to go back, though, to the history of these 10 years and what we've tried to accomplish and do at WBAI. We have made this station the leading and the largest station in all of Pacifica, raising more money than any other station. We were the first one in 25 years to build a brand new home for WBAI. We worked and developed a capital campaign and built a $1 million facility here. It is a building that is nonprofit and is to our great advantage, and we've tried to nourish, cultivate, and take care of it. We have gone through this year, since we came back in January, and raised more money than ever before for WBAI. We will finish at probably more than $2.6, $2.7 million. We have just done the biggest summer fund in the history of this station at $273,000 for a six-day campaign. And we are trying to finish the fiscal year, which is 3-4 weeks away. So this station is in good financial condition so that it is not burdened and crippled by debt for next year, and so that there is a bright and viable and strong future for the station. I came back here in January with the other staff and talked to Leslie and to Dan, the executive director, and said, this would be a transitional assignment for me. I just wanted to do whatever I could and all that I could, as I have worked 24 hours a day for the last 10 years for WBAI, dedicated to the work, the vision, and the mission of Pacifica to return and rebuild the station to that original mission. I said in March at a national board meeting and to the staff here that I would be stepping down so that there would be time and space the necessary preparations so that a solid, righteous, responsible general manager search could take place and someone else could come in here. They have gone through that process with the local board and the staff and listener representatives. They are interviewing now final candidates. I am here at this last transition part, and we hope that that will be soon concluded so that there will be new leadership here. I came here for the transition to help guide the station through the most devastating part of its history in the last 30 years, and that's a destruction that amounted to $5 million, personally affecting WBAI so that not a bill was paid for 13 months. Our electricity was going to be cut off. The Empire State Building, where our antenna is, was in fact under threat. There was almost nothing that was working here when we returned in January. We have now rebuilt a lot. We have stabilized some. There's a huge task in front of us, and we are trying to finish this task, at least this part of the transition, over the next few weeks. Our emphasis is on the future and rebuilding. It is not getting mired in the swamp of the past.
Gary, let me just, if I might, jump in on 2 points. One is earlier, you did remind me, in fact, that we did have a phone conversation quite some time ago. I don't remember the date. I believe it was last summer sometime when you were trying to organize the meeting that you referred to here in New York with several national board members, several people from WBAI, both staff and the local advisory board. And I believe we did have a phone conversation. I think that's when it was. I didn't realize that that very brief conversation was being interviewed, that counted as being interviewed for your investigation. My recollection was that it was less than a five-minute conversation, maybe a 10-minute conversation.
It was about 15 minutes. And I asked you what your opinions were, what was occurring at the board, and what the nature of the conflict was as you saw it, and you gave me your responses, and I was appreciative of that, and I told you, if you have anything else, call me.
And I'm sorry that I did forget, and I did.
But I asked you, did I not say, if you have anything else you want to add to this, please call me?
You might have. As I said, I didn't recall the conversation until you pointed it up on this conversation right now. So thank you for reminding me about that. But again, even if it was 20 minutes, there's, we've now been on the air here for an hour and a half. Clearly, there's a lot to talk about. So let me just move, if I could, to one other point, though, the point you raised about the role of listeners in the foundation and how what's happening now is a break or different from the original definition or outline that Lou Hill and the people who worked with him to establish Pacifica first put together. And you're absolutely right. This is different. What I believe we are trying to do is to build on the mission as first laid out by Lou Hill and his co-workers 53 years ago now, and to make sure that this institution that we are now charged with guiding through the next period, however long that is, builds its work on the foundation that was laid by Lou Hill and the other founders, and that we guide our movement forward on the history and on the mission. And I encourage people to read the mission statement. It still is a very relevant and important document. At the same time, we have to be tuned in to the new realities of the world we live in. One of the things that's happened in our immediate world, in the community we call Pacifica, is that over the last several years, people not only here in New York, but throughout the five listening areas, the listeners, the people who not only listen to the shows, but also, very importantly, who donate their money, their hard-earned money. These are usually not very wealthy people who send in, you know, $10, $15, $100, whatever it might be, every year to make sure these stations are working. They have, I think rightly, called for and, in fact, demanded a voice.
Okay.
But they have a role. And what we are doing, we are moving through a process of expanding the participation so that decisions, and this is not done yet, the redefining, the reshaping of the governance structure and the bylaws is still very much in process right now. But what we are committed to is to strengthen the local boards, which will be elected by the listeners, by volunteers, by people who are part of the Pacifica family, that these will be elected representative bodies and will be the channel or
okay,
the vehicle through which listeners get to
Leslie,
have
who will
voice.
Elect them?
Well, that's one of the issues being debated. Minimally, I think there is agreement that the listener sponsors, that is people who send in money and people who volunteer at the stations, minimally those people will be involved in the voting process.
I'd like to take a few moments and share my thoughts on expanding on what you just said, all right?
Yeah.
Thank you for your thoughts. I appreciate them. And also to Valerie Van Isler, you said, quote, not a bill was paid in the last 13 months. And the implication is that the previous 13 months administration of both Utrecht Lead and Bob Daughtry paid no bills, and that the station was in great shape when they took it over and there were no problems, and that somehow they're responsible. I would hope that you would reflect upon that statement.
Let's correct that statement right away. I said there were many bills unpaid.
No, you didn't. You said,
Gary, let me correct it right now. There were many bills unpaid. So much so that credit was denied by company after company after company.
All right.
And
fine.
We did leave it in good shape for them, by the way. We finished with a balanced budget. That's what Bernard talked about at the September 2000 board meeting when the station was commended, and so was the staff. We had paid back all the past debt, and in fact, we had generated a surplus of $71,000. So we left the station in excellent financial condition, and we did the largest fall membership drive ever in October of 2000.
I was a part of that. But are you willing to concede that there were problems at the station?
Gary, Pacifica stations and WBAI, there will always be some problems in some quarters and somewhere. You try your best. You give it your all. You make a very, very special commitment because you're working with special people who come to WBAI and our other sister stations to do the work for the people, to do the work of public service. That is what the FCC mandate is about. That is even what the CPB conditions are about. Public service in service to the community. That's what we all try to do here. There are a million problems that we have to solve. We solved many of them. We got new equipment in here. We were able to hire new staff. We started new programs. We rebuilt and built a whole new home for WBAI for the first time in 25 years. And we need for this good future and these good things to continue. That's the future that we want for BAI and for the
city.
That point I certainly agree with you. Then what's your next point?
Well, my next point is to go over to my concern that I wanted to share and see what the response of all of you would be. And that is that if everyone wants the best for the stations, and I do believe everyone does, and I even believe that all the members of the board want what is best for the foundation, the difference is how we get there and how accepting we are of another ideology. And as I see it, and this is my own personal, doesn't come from anyone else, and subjective opinion, we have such a difference in how different views of people on the board now or on the labs now or in the stations now see how this mission can be achieved. Some people want to see programs for children and programs on culture and programs on philosophy and comparative religion, on the sciences, things that you're not hearing on other stations, not even on NPR. Without bashing other stations, and I hear a lot of national public radio bashing as if somehow we're better, we're more free, we're more unique, we're more professional and things, and that unfortunately is not a way to get a larger audience or even any audience that's going to support what we're about. We have to be what we are based upon the quality of what we achieve and the professional standards we maintain in doing any individual show.
When do you hear this, Gary?
Where do I hear what?
When do you hear this bashing of PBS? I'm
not PBS, National Public Radio.
Oh, NPR. When do you hear this?
Oh, I've heard it on many different programs.
Could you name one?
Yeah, I can send you a tape of a show that was specific in its challenge that we were better and that we're not going to sound like this. In fact, in the spring, in the March of the spring fun drive, specifically, I was listening to this. And since I was recording some shows, since I couldn't be there to listen to them live, and I like to listen to some of the programs, I was surprised at this kind of rhetoric. I will send those to you. You can listen to them for yourself.
Okay, I would like that. Because you know what happens here at the station, and we all get charged with it. If one person says something, then we all get charged with that being our view. I would like to hear the tape, but I don't think that that's...
But I'm asking, listen to what I said. Where are the programs on these other issues that would reach out to a whole different audience and even expand on the existing audience? And where is the support to get that kind of programming on the air where people look forward to listening to us? There's a reason why people listen, or there's a reason why we don't listen. We're right in the middle of the dial. We have a very enviable position. I think everyone would agree with that. And we're not a new station. It's not as if people don't know BAI exists. It's frequently people have heard BAI and take issue with some of the statements. In fact, the latest piece of literature that was just sent out, I just got it, shows it's an announcement about the, you know, here we are, we're back, not that we were ever gone. But right in the middle there, as I'm reading down, there's clearly something that many of the Jewish people in this audience could take issue with. And because it assumes that, right or wrong from your point of view, it assumes that the Israeli-Palestinian position is completely skewed towards the pro-Israeli, anti-Palestinian, and where there are people who will agree or disagree with that, but that puts us as a station, as a foundation, on a particular track. Now, if you want to have two points of view on that, fine, but how far left are we going to go in this area? And are we also going to encourage people who have more conservative points of view on the air? And isn't that what Lou Hill meant? I'm just asking a question.
Agree.
Where are you all taking it?
Right. I agree that the programming, not only here at BAI, but at all five of our stations, we need to do a very thorough self-examination with input from other people, too, about what the programming sounds like. Are we meeting the mission? Are we matching the mission? I think there's a lot of excellent programming. I think there's some weak programming throughout the network. And I do think that we need to diversify our programming. I think we need to hear different kinds of programming. I think we need really strong, cutting-edge, avant-garde cultural programming. The sounds of music and theater and spoken word that you won't get anyplace else. I think the kinds of programs that you just rattled off a list of, sound very interesting and dynamic. I think within any given program, we want to hear a diversion of different points of views. And I think all that is doable within Pacifica and, in fact, is true to the mission of Pacifica. But I also want to say that I believe that given the nature of mass media in this country right now, that we have a new kind of responsibility, and that is to make sure that the perspectives that challenge the status quo And I must say, I am a leftist, and I'm proud about that. I'm not going to run away from that. That left perspectives that you're not going to get on the mainstream media, that we have some responsibility to open up our airwaves to make those ideas heard. Not that they are the gospel and that can never be challenged and we can't have other, competing ideas also, but I do think that we need to make sure that we're opening up space and giving airtime to the kinds of ideas that you're just not going to hear anyplace else, given the climate in this country today and in the mass media today.
And I
must say, to be very, very honest with you, Gary, I sense a little bit, and I hope I'm not going overboard, almost a kind of red baiting in what you're saying. And I don't like that. I think that we have to defend some space for leftist ideas to be heard, and that we don't have to do that in a way that beats people up or denies space to other voices to also be heard.
But then
and
where are the other voices
Gary,
from? I'm not saying left is better or right's better. I don't take any political position on this, and I'm not here to be one side against the other. I'm here merely to try to examine the different sides and ask a question. If you say that there should be some room left over for some other kind of programming that may challenge the existing program, where is it?
No,
that's not baiting. That's just a pragmatic question.
Right. I just said that I agreed with you. We need to examine the programming now and ask those kinds of questions and see where changes can be made. I don't think we should make changes as happened during the coup period here overnight. I think they need to be thoughtful and deliberative. I think we need input from programmers, from paid staff, non-paid staff, and in this new period in the life of Pacifica, some input from listeners as well. And that's what we're trying to construct here. Not every single listener gets up and, you know, calls up the station and says, I want this show or I want that show. But through an organized vehicle called elected local boards to have some way to get some input from the listener community as well, in balance with, in a cooperative way, with management, with paid staff, with the non-paid programmers, working cooperatively to really look at how we develop the strongest and most wide-reaching kind of programming that we can.
Okay, but what happens if a local lab ends up with people who are very aggressive? Most people don't, like it or not, I don't like the fact most people don't even participate in our democracy in ways they should. But what about the people who take it for granted that someone else is going to do this for them and become as indifferent as they frequently will? They just turn on the radio. If they like something, they listen. If they don't, they turn it off. They go to another station. But they're not out there trying to be a part of the process that allows for it to be a stronger foundation. And as a result, you get people in there who may have a particularly strong point of view that does not represent the average person, doesn't even represent good broadcasting, but now they're in a position of power, and you've given them power to make choices. And when they start making choices, the conflict between a program director or a station manager and a local lab who says, we've been given the power to have the input about what goes on the air, and then what if that input doesn't represent
Is
best for the station?
Gary,
That's a legitimate question.
We are running out of time. Let me just answer this very quickly. I'm talking about input. I'm talking about participation. I'm not talking about giving total power for the day-to-day running of the station to any one group of people. I'm looking for, I think we are all searching for, a governance structure that allows input from the constituent parts of the BAI family, of the Pacifica family, understanding that at the end of the day, our station has a program director, our station has a station manager, our station has a program council. But how do you have input into those processes? That's what we're talking about.
Well, I will wait and hope that the process works. Why is it, and this is a question I'm very interested in a very specific answer. Why do the stations have to put money into the budget of the lab elections?
Well, because, number one, that was the model that was founded at KPFA in Berkeley. They've had two successful elections so far. They've developed a very viable model. There are other options and other possibilities that are being looked at, but it costs money to do mailings. It costs money to conduct forums. It costs money to print up ballots. And so the stations, as part of the democratization of the entire Pacifica Foundation, are making commitments to help that democracy process actually happen. It's important, it's a priority, and it's going to be done. It's part of democracy, Gary.
And, in like I said, we're in a period of reconstruction. And during any period of reconstruction, you can always point out where the problems are. And that's because there are problems. That's why you're reconstructing. So what we're doing now is trying to put into place machinery that can deal with some of those problems. We do have a lot of problems. There are problems in every workplace. I'm sure that there are problems with some employees in your workplace. That's the nature of work. That's the nature of people's interaction. And what you do, you're constantly involved in resolving those issues. What you can do, Gary, is get involved in helping to resolve some of the problems. It is very easy to stand and say, there's a problem, there's a problem, there's a problem. But we need people to get together so that we can try and resolve some of these issues.
Bernard, I have always been there for 24 years, helping in every way I can to resolve any problem, making suggestions and coming to the aid of the station. You mentioned earlier about the electricity was going to be turned off. I'm the one who brought my own check 21 years ago to keep that electricity from being turned off. This audience, I want to see participate in everything that occurs to realize that we are at a point where we must make the constructive changes, but we're not in the positions of power that you're all in. We're there to help if we can. My role as a broadcaster is to do the best possible broadcasting I can do. And by the way, anytime I do a program, just so that you're clear on this, I just did the one on radiation. We sent out 9 letters to the supporters of nuclear radiation, just as one example, inviting them on to share their thoughts. Not one chose to accept that, but the invitation was there. I did the same thing with the meat industry. I did the same thing with the dairy industry. I did the same thing with the sugar industry. Why? Because years ago they all debated me, and they don't do that anymore. But the invitation is there.
We do the same thing, and they don't show up, and you knock us for not having them.
I didn't knock them for not having them.
I think we need to wrap this up. We're running out of time. Gary, again, I do want to thank you, though, for opening up your show and then continuing with us on Armand's show. I think we all want to very much thank Armand DeMille for giving us this time. Hopefully the next time we do something like this, you'll agree to be open to taking some calls from listeners also and continue the discussion in that way. But again, I do want to thank you very much for having this conversation with us.
Well, I want to thank you, Valerie and Bernard and Leslie, for sharing your thoughts and views with us. It's not about who's right or wrong. It's about getting the ideas out so people can see the direction we have to go to try to find a healing and a resolution so that the station exists for everyone who needs it, rich or poor, and educated or not, and the foundation has the strength to go forward without the conflict that has been a part of it for so long. It didn't start recently. It's been there for a long time.
Okay.
We need a new future. I'm hopeful the people in this audience will engage in the constructive dialogue to help that. And for those people who have engaged in the negative dialogue, that unfortunately is not constructive to the future. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Gary, and help us build that new future.
Thank you.
Just let's take a little break, have a little music right now. It's 1:57 in New York. You're tuned to listener-supported, commercial-free community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. Hear Luis Reyes Rivera in the background setting up for his program, Perspective, talking with program director Bernard White and other individuals sliding into the studio, preparing for the next program, coming up next, over WBAI, and you can contact us on the World Wide Web at WBAI.org. You expect some things and you don't expect other things. Coming up next, Perspective, and at 3 p.m., I do believe Earl Caldwell will be in this afternoon, from 3 until 5 p.m. Sitting in Hugh Hamilton's space thus far for the program Talkback. So please stay tuned. A couple of announcements and then on to Perspective.
We, the principal people of Zimbabwe, we, the true owners of this land, shall not budge. We shall not be deterred on this one vital issue. The land is ours.
The Zimbabwean government under President Robert Mugabe has kept their sacred word to the Zimbabwean people. They're returning the land stolen by Europeans back to its rightful owners. For this reason, George Bush and British Prime Minister Tony Blair are planning an attempt to overthrow the democratically elected government of President Robert Mugabe. This must not happen. Join us for a Zimbabwe Emergency Street Rally, Thursday, September 5th, 5 to 7 p.m. at Mount Olivet Baptist Church, 120th Street and Malcolm X Boulevard. For information, call 718-398-1766. That's 718-398-1766. Free the land, defend Zimbabwe.
Elections are coming to WBAI and its sister stations in the Pacifica Network. And for the first time in its history, WBAI's local board will be elected by listeners like you. If you'd like to know more about who can vote, who can run for a seat on the board, and other important election matters, join us and other members of the WBAI community on Thursday, September 5th, 6:30 p.m. at 123rd East 15th Street for an informational evening. Keep in mind, we were only able to regain the station and the network once listeners were informed and got involved. So don't let this opportunity go by. Get informed and get involved.